This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike to take along with Charlie Long. Steve Geller will join us late in the 5 o'clock hour. I want to tell everybody a little after 4:20, Saints wide receiver Brandon Cooks will join us here on the Big 870 WWL, talking about his return to New Orleans. And I actually kept the notes of when he got selected and what Sean Payton spoke about that night about Brandon Cooks. And so I'm going to tell Brandon about it. I'll read it off to him about him as a football player. At 5:20, Mikey Matuk will join us, former LSU outfielder and also played in the majors, will be on with us to talk about the Tigers and tough series against the Longhorns. And they back at it tonight starting at 6:30 right here on the Big 870 WWL as they play the University of Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns. I know Charlie's excited about his Raging Cajuns. Not excited about the record, but he's excited that they get a shot to play the Tigers tonight at 6:30, and you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 WWL. And at 5:40, Gary Smith does a great job covering the Tulane beat, will be on with us today. It was a pro day at Tulane University, and will give us some of the insights of what happened there. And then tomorrow, Jeff Nowak will cover that for us at LSU. So got a full lineup here tonight. Charlie, yesterday as I left, I gave the halftime score of the LSU Lady Tigers. It was 50-49 against Florida State. As I'm driving home, I get an update, and they outscored them 31-6 in third quarter. And I'm like, man, you talk about dominating performances. That was one. They ended up winning last night, 81-55, advancing to the Sweet 16. They'll play North Carolina State Friday night at 6:30 p.m. Anissa Morrow, again, another great game, 26 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists. And then Samaya Smith, who Coach Mulkey had spoke to me about last Thursday, has really – turned it up also, 20 points, 12 rebounds, 6 assists. And so, Charlie, you talk about back-to-back beatdowns. And they've gotten it now, beating San Diego State and then last night 81-55. But it was that right after halftime that they really tore into Florida State.
They blitzed them. I mean, Mike, it was a good Florida State offense too, and they did absolutely nothing in that third frame. So credit to LSU's defense because, I mean, that was the story. The first half was back and forth, a dogfight, and then you get to the second half, LSU just runs away with it. And at some point, I guess that's kind of the championship medal that Kim Mulkey brings to the program. So now, as you mentioned, they face NC State. They're actually favored this weekend over the two-seed NC State by 2.5 points. And then the winner of that matchup will move on to face the winner of UCLA and Ole Miss in the 1-5 matchup in the Elite Eight with a spot in the Final Four on the line. This is just what Coach Mulkey does. Like, it's almost a guarantee that when she's coaching a team, you can at least book their ticket to the Sweet 16, if not further.
I told her what Will Wade had spoke to us about when he joined us earlier last week was that, you know, when we went to the tournament last year, it was like a basketball field trip. You know, we had no expectations, but, you know, this time it was, hey, we gotta come out with a win here, a couple wins. We're not just there just to show up. And her response was, okay, we've got LSU women's basketball at a level. We're not just showing up. We playing for bigger kind of fish to fry than getting to the Sweet 16.
The NCAA tournament or committee just keeps giving them the 3 seed every single year with Coach Mulkey, and every single year they make these deep runs. So, yeah, just keep doing it. You know, you know what you can expect with the Coach Mulkey coach squad and this LSU Tigers team, as you mentioned, with their dominant victory over Florida State, looks like they're rolling in during the Sweet 16.
And then last night, Charlie, I listened to part of the pregame. Todd Graffanini was on with Gus Cattingill, and they were talking about all the different lineups that were in store for the Pelicans. And the 76ers have had more different starting lineups than the Pelicans have, which is unbelievable. And last night, coming out with that 112-99 win, and they didn't get blitzed in the third quarter. They actually outscored them 32-26 in the third quarter. But a guy that we thought was just sort of a throw-in, in the trade to Toronto, Kelly Olynyk, you know, 14.7 rebounds. Kelly has really, really exceeded all expectations of what I think both you and I thought would happen when they acquired him in the trade.
Yeah, so Justin from Boot Crew Media has a great tweet about Kelly Olynyk in his 15 games with the Pelicans, 10.9 points per game, 6.5 rebounds per game, 4 assists per game on 53.5 field goal shooting percentage. Mike, I agree with you. When they made the trade with Brandon Ingram, we're like, okay, Kelly Olynyk, you know, whatever. But he's been a really strong piece, and he's under contract next year. So if you're looking at the Pelicans for 2025-26 season, Kelly Olynyk's going to be here, and he's going to be a valuable piece off the bench. And maybe in some rotations, he could be a stretch four for this team, or potentially five. Like, he provides this kind of good positional versatility at the four and the five, and he's a floor spacer. We always talk about his great IQ, but he's performed very, very well with the Pels so far. That's definitely the least of my worries with the late season surge for this Pelicans team.
And even Mise last night also, 16 points. But
him and Carlo.
Think about, you know, the start of the season, the Pelicans were disappointing. But the team that's really been the most disappointing, hasn't it been the 76ers?
It's either them or Phoenix.
Phoenix
has been healthy and bad. Philadelphia has been just, I mean, they're the Eastern Conference version of the Pelicans where they've dealt with so many injuries. I sent you this article, Mike, from Tim Bontemps on ESPN, where they talked about the tanking in the NBA and how it's gotten awful out of hand. Mike, there were 10 players missing for the 76ers last night. I mean, it was like a G League team out there. There was a reason that the Pelicans were sitting Zion, they were sitting, you know, CJ, and they were still basically 4.5 point favorites. And they beat down the 76ers. Like, they won that game pretty comfortably. So the reason being, the 76ers are quite literally playing a G League team. And the reason for that is that their pick for this upcoming season is protected. So if they fall out of the top six, I believe, the pick conveys and goes to OKC. They're trying their best.
That's all the OKC needs.
Well, yeah, of course. But I'm just saying, there's teams, and this Bontemps article is great on ESPN. I recommend anyone that's interested in the NBA to go check it out. The Jazz are the worst defenders of this. They're openly tanking to try and get the number one overall pick. And it's kind of embarrassing, in all honesty. But the 76ers are right there up with them. Like, they're trying to make sure that they can keep their first round pick and not have it convey to OKC. So it's been, you know, yes, the races at the end of the season as far as the playoff race, the play-in race, all that good stuff. But it's also the inverse where you're looking at all these teams kind of racing to the bottom, and it's a bad look.
We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. We'll have on with us new Saints receiver, Willie, coming back for a second run here. Brandon Cooks will join us here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dettelia, along with Charlie Long, running things behind the scenes. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, one of the newest members of the New Orleans Saints, back to New Orleans for a second go-round, Brandon Cooks, wide receiver for the Saints. Brandon, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be on.
Brandon, what was the deciding factor on you coming back to New Orleans? I know you had other teams interested in signing you, but what was the main factor in coming back here in the black and gold? Because, you know, a lot of people, they don't get the business part of this, how you left the first time. Come on, it's nothing personal. It's business. Now, some people leave ugly when they go somewhere, but that wasn't the case with you, and it was a business decision.
Yeah, you know, it's all a part of it. I think, you know, the side factor of coming back is really just a full circle moment, right? The journey has been awesome. I've been blessed to be able to leave and go have a lot of success, and the team has been a lot of success since I've been gone as well. So I think from that aspect, just coming back, being home, legacy play from the standpoint of starting – being back to where I all started, and I really believe in what Kellen is all about and the staff that he's built and, you know, the strength and performance staff, everything. I think they have something good going and a lot of great players, so absolutely.
Well, you got to go up against the Eagles a few times and Kellen Moore running that offense last year, but your impressions of the new head coach here?
I'm very impressed from the standpoint of just this is approach to the game and how he uses everyone and gets everyone involved. I mean, obviously they had a lot of playmakers there in Philly, and I think we have the same here in New Orleans. So it's going to be great just getting to work and letting everything kind of take care of itself. But I think, you know, he's been a lot, part of a lot of great offenses, and he's continued to show that year in and year out. And I think he's ready for that role of being a head coach.
Brandon, I kept the notes from when the Saints picked you the first time. Sean Payton came out that night, and I actually found it finally this morning. I knew I had it, but it took me a little while to find it. And this was his comments about you. Said, one, right off the bat, what impressed him about you? Productive at the college level, and he stayed healthy. He's not the biggest receiver, but he stayed healthy, and he was productive. He was impressive in gaining separation. Didn't matter if it was man coverage, bracket, zone coverage. He got separation. His run after catch skills are at a high level. And then he kind of paused a little bit and he said, speed. They got a lot of fast guys in this world, but you put a helmet and shoulder pads on them, and it's not quite the same speed. And he was like, Brandon Cooks is fast with a helmet and pads on. Man, I think back of when the Saints select you. Man, he was kind of dead on all of those things. And I look back, 9 out of 11 seasons. Now, you're going to have injuries. You play in this league as long as you have. You're going to have some. But you played 12 or more games in 9 of the 11 seasons. You had 6 seasons with 65 or more catches, 6 seasons of over 1,025 yards and 60 touchdowns. Productivity. So when Coach Payton parted that process of selecting you, he was dead on right about his evaluation.
Yeah, shout out to Coach Payton. And, you know, I got a lot of love for him. I really do. And, you know, we still stay in touch. And he's one of the best, you know, coaches for a reason. But I'm still growing. You know what I mean? I think you're absolutely right. He was right on all those, but I'm still continuing to get better. Speed is still there. I'm still getting better. So.
Which kind of give everybody who hasn't heard the story your connection to wide receiver coach Keith Williams, who you've known for a long time now. He was trying to recruit you when you came out of high school.
We always laugh because he's been, you know, recruiting me since I was 17 years old. You know, he was at Fresno State. Keith, I ain't going to Fresno. You know, fast forward, he was at a couple other spots, and, you know, it never really worked from that aspect, but it's guys all time is always perfect. So here we are, you know, both from Stockton, California, have an opportunity to work together. And, I really look forward to that because we have a great room, and I think iron sharpens iron. So,
Brandon, last week we were talking with Brad Sham, the voice of the Cowboys, and he specified the leadership that you brought that young Cowboys room. Kind of talk a little bit about that at this point in your career, being a veteran leader for, you know, a young Saints receiver room that I know you've talked about how talented it is with Rashid Shaheed and Chris Olave, but talk about the veteran leadership that you bring.
Yeah, man, I truly take pride in that. I really do, because I know at the end of the day, it's not all about me. Where I'm trying to get and what we're trying to get as a team, we all need each other. And I've always prided myself in that over the years. And I really look forward to it because it seemed like CEO and Sheed and all the guys already got a great head on their shoulders, right? And so I'm just hopefully I can add some tools here and there on and off the field. We collaborate together and do some great things. So I think it's going to be fun. I can't wait to get to work. I know Sheed is recovering. But, boy, you talk about speed. I look forward to seeing that in person.
Brandon, one of the things, we talked to Drew Brees about this, and he was like, you know, I hadn't played with too many people that had that type of speed like what Brandon Cooks has. And he said, you know what, the most humiliating thing for me, I didn't want to underthrow him. So he said, man, I would try to air it out that he could just run under it. Because he said, you know, you don't play on the same team with guys that can really run at that level. Brandon Cooks could run. But you and Drew really kind of hit it off well here, despite the fact, you know, most people didn't look at Drew as one of these great deep ball passers.
Yeah, yeah.
But when he had to, he could uncork it. But he said, man, I didn't want to be embarrassed by throwing it short.
What people don't understand about this game, like, you could say that about Drew all you want to, but he's such an intelligent, smart quarterback. It didn't matter, where you was at. He was going to be able to get the ball to you just because his process, right, his way of deleting the defense and deleting things that he knows he's not going. So we had a lot of connection. If I'm not mistaken, it's still my longest touchdown in my career was with him. So, shout out to Drew, you know, like family, like a brother to me. And, obviously one of the greatest for a reason. So people can say what they want to say, but at the end of the day, look at the numbers. So
he always had great respect for you and still did. When we did the pickleball tournament, you know, we were talking about, you know, certain people maybe in free agency. And he was like, man, all I know is Brandon Cooks can play. He said that's yeah. You can say I said it. He can still play. Charlie?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a connection that we have, right? And the belief that you have from a Hall of Famer like that, it's special. And, you don't take that lightly because you want to prove those guys right, right? You don't care about proving guys wrong. You want to prove the people that believe in you right. And that's what it's all about.
From one quarterback to the next, Brandon, I know you had some very strong words about Derek Carr yesterday and kind of his leadership and veteran presence and, you know, his ability to still sling it, so to speak. And I want to get your thoughts on Derek. Have you spoken to him since you signed back in New Orleans? And then also, you know, your thoughts on him as a player, too.
Yeah, no, I've spoken with him. You know, we kind of keep in touch even before this. But like I said, my thoughts of him as a player, he can make any throw. He's obviously been playing in this league, you know, for a long time and doing it at a high level. Hopefully, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, coming here and staying healthy, and that's for all of us. And I think he's having a heck of an offseason right now, getting his body right, getting his mind right. And I just look forward to getting to work with him at the end of the day. We can say all this, but it's all about the work, right? And he knows I'm going to work. I know he's going to work, and I'm going to push him and vice versa. So I look forward to that, you know, coming a couple weeks or whatever in OTAs.
When we started advertising you'd be on, man, I stopped to go get gas. So guy comes walk up to me and he says, man, ask Brandon Cooks, what's the first time he heard the Archer? You know, that deal about being the Archer. So I'm going to ask you, who kind of gave you that pop of it? And because, man, people remember you with that move.
You know, honestly, I'm a man of faith. And so it's Psalm 144:6 is a scripture that I came across years ago, and it was violent. You know what I mean? Obviously we play a violent sport, and it just kind of resonated with me, and I kept it going. And that's my way to be able to give God glory. Obviously having this foundation, this platform, you know, we all have unique ways of doing it. And that's my way of doing it for sure.
When you different fields have faster tracks, because I've heard that from so many different people. Man, listen, this particular stadium has a little faster track than another stadium. So compare
to the dome, got one, baby.
The dome, I was going to ask you, because the dome is one of them I've heard got a really fast track to it.
Yes, sir. And I'm not just saying that either. We even, you know, being there, leaving there, we, you know, guys, we all talk around the league like, man, what's a track that you can't wait to, you know, play on? It gives you some extra oomph. And the dome is definitely one. No question.
Playing with Drew Brees and Tom Brady, man, that's a gift, man. that you get to play with both of those guys. And so thought of the comparisons, the two, and I'm not saying negative things, but kind of, and how they approached the game, there was a lot of similarities because it was serious with both of them.
Oh, man, don't. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you talk about those guys playing against the one each other. I can tell you this. They always knew, you know, what the other one was doing every week in and week out because they're both so competitive, right? But their leadership, man, is they do it in different ways, but it's so contagious. And, man, it's just really they just – On that level, it's so similar. And, you know, I got different styles of play, but, you know, the best for a reason, both of them. I really will say that.
Brandon, as of right now, 57 players in NFL history have ever reached 10,000 career receiving yards. You're right at the precipice. I mean, now that 9,532, kind of what would that milestone mean to you if you can reach it this season with the black and gold?
You know, and, you know, that's one thing, obviously, right now. I ain't really reflecting on that. I can truly say that. But, obviously, when you bring it up, it'll be special in my mind. I kick myself sometimes because I should have been there. Obviously, things happen. You know, health happens. But I look forward to just getting back out there on the field, playing my game, and really letting the league see, like, my best ball being played. And I know that I'll take care of itself. And we're just going to keep pushing, man.
Brandon, last question for you. Your health, and do you train with somebody in particular in the off season?
Yeah, I've got my same trainer and PT that I've had over the last 9 years. And as far as player wise, you know, there's a couple of us that train together here and there. For a while, me and Cup trained probably for those 3 to 4 years together in off season, living here in Oregon. But I'm always training with another player, whether they play currently or trying to play. I'm always having a handful of guys around just for that competition purpose.
Cup don't have to go too far now.
No.
Not after signing with Seattle.
You know, my dog back home. So, yeah.
Brandon, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Wishing you the best of luck. And I know, man, keep everybody healthy. You got to leave. Lethal threesome there. Now they got to get. Now the running game always helps the receivers. I believe that you get a running game going, man. That safety, he's got to come in that box to try to stop that run. You see a lot of single coverage downfield.
That's a dangerous thing to do. So we that's what we're gonna work, man. Coming in this off season, working together. Body work and whatnot, taking care of our bodies is going to definitely be at the pinnacle of me trying to, you know, teach these younger guys and their process and just go from there.
Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon, Brandon. Best of luck.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Look forward to spending time with y'all.
Thanks, Brandon.
Brandon Cooks, wide receiver with the New Orleans Saints. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. Charlie, let me answer this text because I know he sent it yesterday. I think it's 8942 about Isaac Tesla, who is the wide receiver for University of Arkansas. And he was at Hillsdale College and he transferred. His production, you know, was pretty good at Arkansas. Now, he's a neophyte as far as a receiver. He is a big-body guy. Now, he's almost 6'4", 215 pounds, can really run well. But you're going to have to do some work with him as a route runner. That is obvious. When he went to the Senior Bowl, you could see was not the most refined route runner. But in this draft class, that doesn't have a ton of big body receivers, a almost 6'4" receiver who ran, you know, because he's been timed under 4.4 in the 40-yard dash. I think he ran 4.43 or something at the combine. But he's a developmental guy. You're not expecting that he's going to come in here. As a middle-round pick, I think this is where he's going to go. And the gentleman brought up Besh. Besh will go before he does. One thing with Besh, man, can he run a route? Oh, my goodness. He gets into and out of that cut and that break so quick. Doesn't lose any speed. Got terrific hands. And my first comp for Beck, first time I saw him, I told this to Coach O. Man, you look at him, and he reminds you of an old-school receiver, of the way he can run a route. Today, the comp would be Puka Nacua.
Yep.
That's who he reminds you of, in that he's not the fastest, not the quickest. He just gets open, and he catches the ball. And maybe the best recruiting class, and I know we've talked about this before, LSU's ever had at receiver. In that one year, Brian Thomas Jr., Malik Nabers, Besh, Deion Smith didn't end up here, but he was in one of the top receivers in the country from Mississippi. But think about the careers, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, and now Besh.
And we'll see if Besh is the next stop. I love the Puka comp, Mike. I love watching Besh play. Everything that touches his hands, it's like he's got glue attached to his fingers. He catches everything, it feels like. And, you know, talking about the wide receivers in this class, it's every single class is going to have, you know, some of these top guys, it feels like, every single year. The big body receivers, I kind of agree. If you're looking at, you know, Tet McMillan, he obviously stands out.
That's the one guy.
Yeah. Jaden Higgins from Iowa State's also got kind of got that big body frame. But outside of that, basically a majority of the top 10-ish receivers in this class aren't the tallest guys in the world. So we were just talking with Brandon Cooks. Obviously, he adds more speed element to that receiver room, but they are still missing the big physical possession receiver, so to speak. Tet is the one that's going to go in the first round. Jaden Higgins, though, from Iowa State, I've seen a little bit of
different opinions. I think he'll be a second-round pick.
I think so, too. But I've seen, you know, some people's, you know, in this mock drafts, you know, Mike, kind of getting him in the third round. I don't think he's going to fall out of
the
second round.
That long.
I think he may even go kind of early second round, but he could potentially be there at pick 40 for you, you know, if you're really interested in getting that kind of big body.
Noel's pretty damn good, too. He's a smaller guy from Iowa State.
Yeah, I get
him. He is super quick.
Royal confused. I don't know why. But yeah, Noel's a different type of receiver, obviously.
Totally.
As you kind of mentioned there. But Higgins is probably that second guy on my radar if you're talking about big body receivers, if you don't go Tet McMillan in the first round.
Man, if Besh ends up with the Chiefs or the Eagles, they're going to have a lot of people tearing the enamel off their teeth. But it wouldn't shock me one bit. Let's go to our Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line, Charlie. Let's go to James. James, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey guys, I'm hoping that Cooks landing here again is sort of replacing Olave, because I don't think anybody. I mean, do you guys want to pay him next year? I mean, I don't think. I think he's soft as cotton, and I think the league. I think he would be on the market. He would be the best wide receiver or one of the best coming out. Out of this class.
Here's the thing, though, James. I would never want to deal him now, because if you're talking about getting the most bang for your buck, you got a guy coming off some concussion issues. You want him. If you were thinking of maybe trying to trade him somewhere down the line, your value now is going to be the least you ever going to get for Olave.
So, it's the Zion issue, Mike.
Yeah, and so my thing about it is hopefully he can stay healthy and be a productive receiver. I want to see, because I can't even kind of imagine exactly how they're going to use him in that Kellen Moore offense. He is going to be your lead receiver,
right,
Chris Olave. But how he's going to use Rashid Shaheed and Cooks, I think, will be intriguing, because kind of they both the same type of guys.
So the
just
thing,
one young, one a little, one older.
James brings up an interesting point about Olave, though. The receiver market is booming. Every single offseason, it feels like a new receiver is kind of breaking a record for the contract. Most recently, it was obviously Jamar becoming the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history at $40.1 million average annual value. But, I mean, CeeDee Lamb had done it. Justin Jefferson had done it. like the top receivers are getting paid bank right now. And it's so funny that we're only a few years removed from the Titans and they didn't want to pay AJ Brown $20 million per year.
Yow.
Yeah, how about that, huh? The market kind of changes a little bit. But I guess my question to you, Mike, would be, you know, when his contract comes up and he's due for a big payday, what are you paying Chris Olave? Is he worth like...
Well, 30? I have a fifth-year option.
I know, but is he worth $30 million average annual value? That's kind of the top of the line wide receiver market. I don't know if he is. And we just saw T. Higgins get paid a nice contract that was just under 30 average annual value, but he's also not a wide receiver one in that team, obviously, because of Jamar, and we'll see if it works out there.
Okay, who would you want on your roster, T. Higgins or Chris Olave?
I would take T.
Same here.
So if you're talking about Olave, I don't think he's going to reach that $30 million threshold. And even
I bet it's close if he's healthy.
Well, I don't. Yes, it probably will be close. But would you pay him that?
I'm just telling you that's going to be the market value, because look at how this kind of, I guess you might say, mushroom cloud of money is going into the wide receiver market.
Yeah,
you're not going to get him. Yeah, you know, at 24, 25.
Yeah,
it's going to be closer to 30. If he can stay healthy and have a big season, that's all I'm telling you. It's the market. Some people say, "Well, I wouldn't pay it." You might not, but somebody else will. That's the way this league works.
Yeah,
and he's not an older player, but again, coming off those concussion issues, I think right now would not be the smart thing to do to deal him. You would want to see him back out on that field. And for any team, they would want the exact same thing. I'm not giving you up a ton for a receiver that, you know, he fought some major concussion issues last year. Not once, twice.
I know I'm kind of playing both sides of the coin here because I'm saying I wouldn't pay him $30 million average annual value. But at the same time, you see some of the trade offers like on Twitter and stuff like that. Like, oh,
yeah, who's making all that
up? Well, like some reporter in Houston's just like, oh, here's what the Texans could trade for Chris Olave because they have a big need at receiver. And I think he would actually fit great in Houston with Nico Collins as wide receiver one and him as wide receiver two. But they're like, oh, a second round pick and then like a pick swap day four or fourth round pick swap or something like that. Like, I don't know if that really gets it done for someone like Chris Olave.
The market will not go down on receivers.
No, it won't. It's only going up.
And so I think that goes to show you, you know, a lot of people ask us about Michael Thomas. Why isn't he with a team? That goes to show you what the league thinks of Michael Thomas. If he's not on an NFL team today, look what they're paying receivers today. And Michael Thomas in his prime, man, just maybe got born a little bit too early.
Like, but three,
man,
or
you
four
just
years
look at
too
that,
early.
That 4 or 5 year run was unbelievable. The numbers he put up in that offense of the Saints. But then once injuries start to hit, worst thing in the world for an athlete. You start to get injured, and then, you know, people say, I'm not going to pay it. Not going to pay it. And he got kind of loud. And I think that's the other part. These teams in the NFL, they all kind of talk to one another, know exactly kind of what's happening behind the scenes. We'll be back here on Sports Talk and finish up hour number one right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike to tell you along with Charlie Long. Charlie, one of the texters wrote me, Mike, if only Don Hutson played today, boy, he'd be rolling in some serious dough. Man, my grandpa would talk to me about Don Hutson.
Oh, yeah.
He was the Alabama Antelope. He played with the Packers in the 30s and 40s. And so, no, I didn't get to see Don Hutson play. But you talk about a guy who tilt the field back then. He'd be getting that Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase money. He was that good of a player. And back then, it was two platoon. So Hutson not only was your starting receiver, he was your starting safety. And he also was the kicker for the Green Bay Packers. He played for Curly Lambeau.
Yeah.
Lambeau Field.
Yeah, yeah.
Named after Curly. That's who Don Hutson played for. But University of Alabama player, and just a great player of that era. So, yeah, he'd be getting that Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson money if he was playing today.
Every single offseason we say it, though, Mike, the wide receiver market's booming. We have someone, 5143, that agrees with me that you would not pay Olave $30 million average annual value. It's just not worth it, that he would look to draft a receiver. I'm kind of in that boat too, Mike. I'm looking kind of towards the future, start to build that receiver room post-Olave.
We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break. Mike Dottillo along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody at 6:30 tonight, LSU baseball as the Tigers play University of Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns, and you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 WWL. Charlie, did the Tigers announce who's going to be the pitcher in that game?
Let me double check. I haven't seen anything just yet, but I'll be interested to see what that decision is, because Jay's come out and said that William Schmidt is basically done pitching in midweek games for his career at LSU. Maybe it's Connor Ware gets the start. Jaden Newt was the one that got the start last week, so it could be him as well. Let me go double check here, Mike.
Yeah, and at 5:20, Mikey Matuk will be on with us. People remember him from his days at LSU. Also played in the major leagues, and he's the host of Mic'd Up, the podcast, and on YouTube. And you can listen to Mikey there, and also he'll give us his breakdown of the SEC, which is a gauntlet when you take a look at the teams in the Southeast Conference and how they've played. And at 5:40, Gary Smith, publisher of the Wave Report. Also, he covers the Tulane Green Wave for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans. And they had pro day today at Tulane. And they got a couple guys there, got an opportunity to take it to the next level as a draft choice. And so we'll go over those particular guys with Gary Smith at 5:40.
Charlie? So nothing yet from LSU baseball, Mike. And I just want to build on our conversation from last hour as well. When we were talking about wide receivers in this draft class, ESPN's got their kind of ranking, NFL draft ranking for the wide receiver position. I think that's kind of interesting, some of these names and where they're kind of placed. Tet McMillan, obviously number one. We've mentioned him as a potential landing spot with the Saints at pick 9 overall if you want that big body receiver. Number two, they have Matthew Golden from Texas.
Put him too also.
Okay, so you agree with that. This is where it gets kind of interesting. Jaden Higgins, who I said was, you know, maybe a round two guy that you could potentially target at pick 40 if you don't get Tet McMillan in the first round, they have him ranked number three on this list. I think that's a little bit high.
Okay, have they watched Luther Burden the third place?
This is what's weird to me. Luther Burden's at 6 on this list, Mike, and Emeka Ebuka at 4. I like Ebuka a lot, and I know we've talked about him, and the word that always comes to mind when you watch him is just polish. He's so NFL ready from Ohio State, but that seems like all these Ohio State receivers, they just come into the NFL ready to play. Trey Harris at number 5, and then Luther Burden at number 6.
I don't get that.
Who
put that list out?
It's this ESPN, man. And so I would probably have Luther Burden a couple spots higher. Same thing with Ebuka. Higgins is probably closer to 5 or 6 for me, but at the same time, you know, maybe they don't see as many receivers going in the first round.
From years past, what you don't have is that uppercut. See, Tet is the one guy that I think everybody would say he's going to be a top 15 pick. Now, where exactly he goes, you know, sometimes because there's a run on a position, you get maybe pushed down a spot or two, but he's the one guy I think we'd all agree on. Then you look at Matt Golden. I saw him play. He played University of Houston first.
Yeah.
And then he transferred to Texas. And, man, he has gotten so much better as a route runner. His separation ability. He catches the ball pretty well in traffic. And he's got tremendous foot speed after the catch. But, man, watch Luther Burden III. Oh, my goodness. He is as smooth as could be. He's got outstanding run after catch ability. He makes people miss in space. Maybe I'm missing something, but maybe I'm not. This is the season two of agents pushing guys ahead of guys that don't have one thing on the resume: productivity.
Mike, I'll ask you this about a couple of these guys. With Luther Burden, do you see some Malik Nabers in his game? I mean, just as far as the yak capabilities and when he gets the ball in his hands,
Malik was a little thicker guy, faster.
Okay.
A tad quicker.
I like him a lot. And so my question is about Tet McMillan, going back to him, the number one receiver prospect in this class. To your point about the chunks, the last few years, I remember there was like the year with like Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave and Drake London in one draft. And then just this past year, it was the top three guys of Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze. If you're talking about Tet McMillan as a prospect, And if he was in last year's draft class, just take him as this year's prospect.
He'd be the fourth guy.
He'd be the fourth guy. I agree.
He'd be the fourth guy.
I agree.
Again, his uniqueness, one, he's a big player, but he has a skill set to get up in the air and to make a catch where there's a lot of arms and hands and comes down with it. Because of his size, he's never going to be the quickest or the fastest getting into and out of a cut and a break just because he's so big. But, man, he gives you a target. And when the ball's up in the air, he makes a play on it. It doesn't matter if he's bracketed or if he's got double coverage. He's got an innate ability to get that big body up and make the catch. And a lot of times you see guys that are tall, they don't come down with it. With Tet, he comes down with it.
And Tet, one of those underrated things, I remember we were talking with Dalton Wasserman about this, Mike, from the PFF College Football Show. With Tet, he had such impressive numbers after the catch, too, for a big guy. And typically, like, you'll see all these kind of smaller receivers that will put up these crazy numbers and elusive, like, they're elusive. They can, you know, make defenders miss an open space. Tet's 6'4", 215 pounds, and he's putting up these types of numbers where he's just making defenders look silly. So there were the kind of the concerns about his quote-unquote separation capabilities at the NFL level. I think he's going to be a really, really solid pro, Mike. And
I think he's going to be more than solid. I think he's going to be a really good NFL player when you have that type of size. Now, the one thing I saw it early last year with him that he had a tendency to maybe look up the field. He dropped a couple that were easy catches for him, but that's not that he has bad hands. That's he's looking up the field to try to make a play. And it was on short throws. It was not the intermediate type of things, but man, Tet McMillan is a really good football player. Right scheme, right quarterback, getting him the football. He's got a chance to be special in this league.
I keep hearing, and I keep liking it the more I think about it, the athleticism compact of like someone like Drake London, right? When he was coming out of the draft and the Atlanta Falcons took him 8th overall. I think that's kind of where you'll see Tet go. I think he's going to be a top 10 pick. There's too many squads. The more I think about it, I know that people have really played up, you know, Mike Vrabel's comments about needing a big body receiver that they could take Tet at number 4. I don't think that's going to happen because I think that Abdul Carter will be sitting in their laps and they'll take him with the 4th overall selection. But past that, there's a couple teams that could potentially take Tet before the Saints. And that's my only worry is that, you know, he might not be there at pick 9. When we were talking with Des Johnson from the host of the Believe in Panthers podcast, he mentioned this, Mike, that with all the money the Panthers have spent, they could potentially be in the market to help Bryce Young and get a true X receiver in Tet McMillan with the 8th overall selection and maybe address defense later on in the draft because they've spent a lot of money on that side of the ball.
And they're going to be numbers on defense. See, that's the one thing that you and I've talked about off the air where I think late in round one, early in round two, the run will be on offensive linemen. There aren't as many this year. And if some of those guys are there, they're going to be taken off quickly because supply and demand, if it's not as many, you better get them because you're not going to get that a little bit later. With defensive linemen, we may see some guys that we think are first-round pick people bleed into the second round.
Right.
Because I think teams say, you know what, I can get a defensive lineman a little closer to that guy in round two than in round one. I can't get that offensive lineman where I'm picking in the second round.
And that's why I wouldn't be mad with the Saints addressing offensive tackle with the 9th overall selection either, Mike. I mean, we'll see what happens, I'm never against drafting trenches. So if they decide to use the 9th overall selection on offensive line, defensive line, I wouldn't be mad. But, you know, going back to my conversation about Tet, yes, the Panthers could potentially pick him at pick 8. I could see the Jets maybe grabbing him. I mean, if the Jets, I've heard that they're kind of very interested in Tyler Warren from Penn State, the tight end. Because
I think they got a lot of teams interested in Tyler Warren.
They don't have a tight end, you know, on their roster that's
anywhere close. Who spent more? Brock Bowers made the comment when he got picked by the Raiders. Who'd you spend the most time with? And he was quick with it.
Jets. Yeah.
That he thought that's where he might end up. Now, they needed offensive line help. I get that part.
And they got Olu.
Yeah. And so what happened, he sort of got bumped a little bit because of the fact it's the big man theory.
But the Jets are a team that's missing, you know, another pass catcher, right? Like, they have Garrett Wilson, but they could use Tyler Warren. They could also use Ted McMillan potentially with the 7th overall pick. The Raiders at pick 6, I know we've kind of pinned them as taking Ashton Jeanty with the 6th overall selection, but I mean, their top receivers, Jacoby Myers, kind of goes back a little bit to the Chris Olave conversation, where he's a good wide receiver too, but is he really a wide receiver one? I mean, they could potentially invest in picking someone like Ted McMillan as well. So there's a couple spots ahead of the Saints that, you know, maybe McMillan makes sense and he may not be there by pick 9. But obviously, as we've talked about with his skill set, I think it would be a good fit.
Okay, how many people pick? Now, I had Penix as a first round pick. How many people had him in the top 10?
No, I mean,
none.
Yeah, it was a lot of people. I mean, how many people had 6 quarterbacks going in the top 12?
No, I had him in round 1, but not in the top 12.
Yeah, the top 12.
Yeah, because I had Penix and Nix going a little bit later. But when you have that run, that's what kind of kicks a player down a little bit. And so it'll happen in this draft class also. When we come back, former LSU and Major League Baseball player Mikey Matuk will join us talking LSU baseball right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakland Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, former LSU and Major League Baseball player, host of Mic'd Up on YouTube, Mikey Matuk. Mikey, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Mikey, man, if you listen sometimes, I mean, you know, fans are fans. Man, it sounds like, you know, everything's coming down. Charlie and I talked about this midweek last week that, man, Texas, they are a really good baseball team. And I know one thing, that dude that's managing them, he knows what the hell he's doing out there. And they got a talented team. So, you know, you saw the first game say, oh, I got a couple texts. Oh, man, y'all praising Texas too much. Watch what LSU's going to do. And then all of a sudden, Mikey, it was like what could have went wrong. Your pitching sort of failed you. And, man, the fielding all across the board was not good and didn't get the timely hits like you had saw before. But it's early in the season. But, man, for some LSU fans, oh, my God, you'd swear, man, we got a Category 5 hurricane in the Gulf.
Yeah, you know, they look, that's what makes the fans so great, right? They're super passionate,
yes.
But they're not one to take a deep breath and not want to be rational in situations like this, and that's okay. You know, that's what we're here for, to kind of talk them down. But I do not think that, obviously, you know, going to Texas and losing the series is something to panic about. At the end of the day, LSU's still 4-2 in conference play. Texas is a top 5, top 10 team, depending on what polling you're looking at. And so it wasn't like they went on the road against a team that they were infinitely better than. They went on a road against a team that was very talented and very well coached and was playing at home. And so, you know, LSU played great, probably their most complete game of the year on Friday, and played well for half the game on Saturday. And then after that, the wheels kind of fell off, and Texas came roaring back. And then on Sunday, just felt like it was a little bit of a dead game. But I kind of give the credit to Texas on that, and making Chase Shores work really hard early in the game, and kind of having long innings in the bottom half and then short innings in the top half. And, you know, sometimes that baseball just works out that way. You know, there's a reason why you play the most games of any sport in baseball, because it's not a game that's decided between 1, 2, 10, even 20 games. It's decided over a long term of the year. And you know, I think LSU still has a lot to obviously play for, but I think that, you know, fans, if you're watching, it's not something to be alarmed about. You know, it's just a bad weekend. It's a weekend that they're going to get better from, and I imagine you're going to see that tonight against UL.
Mikey, one of the things is, Bobby always says this, man, quarterbacks and head coaches, they get way too much credit when you win. They get way too much blame when you lose. And in baseball, the manager gets it too. Man, I've heard some of the dumbest things possible about Jay Johnson, about, you know, how things go. But, you know, your thoughts on Jay, just what I think he's done a phenomenal job here. Really has in a ever-changing world of college athletics and in college baseball, where we have seen the shift from out west to the south, where that's where most of the top teams are in the deep south, if it's in Texas, Oklahoma, and again, from the southeastern part, that, man, Jay, he gets it. He knows how to recruit, and he gets the very most out of his players.
Yeah, no, I think Jay is the perfect guy for the job here at LSU. I think, like you mentioned, all those, you know, those points of, you know, the landscape of college baseball and how recruiting is a year-to-year thing. And not only do you have to recruit players coming in, you have to recruit players in the portal, and you have to recruit your own players to stay. And so there's a lot of different dynamics in the recruiting world and the coaching world than there ever has been before. And I think he's a perfect guy for the job. I think he's been extremely successful, and everybody points to, oh, you won with Paul Skeens and Dylan Cruz. Like, yeah, but you won. The most important part is he won. There's a lot of schools out there that have players that made it to the big leagues that are top five picks in the draft on the same team that didn't win, right? So just because you have the talent doesn't mean that you're just automatically going to win the game. I think baseball's the most obvious sport to see that in. And so I think, you know, he's the second most winning winningest coach in college. I don't even know if I said that right. In college baseball, behind Tony Vitello, and you know, you don't just do that based off of 1 year. You do that based off of the 4 years that he's been here. And you know, I still think this team that he's got right now is the deepest and most talented, probably top to bottom, from number one to number 40th on the roster. And I think he's doing a fantastic job. The SEC is harder than it's ever been before. The conference itself has more talented players. There's deeper teams. I mean, I think there's probably 11 or 12 teams, I guess, think ranked in the top 25 or have been ranked in the top 25 at some point this season. And so it's just an unprecedented league, and I think he's navigating it tremendously.
I don't know how much you've been able to watch with Mississippi State, but that's the next series after they play tonight when they play the Raging Cajuns. Any insights on what you're expecting from Mississippi State this weekend?
Well, Mississippi State LSU always has a rivalry built into it, you know, from Ron Polk and Skip Bertman days till now. And, you know, Mississippi State won the national championship, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, and they haven't been great since. I know they were ranked in the top 25 early in the season, and then they got into the SEC and they've gotten off to a bad start. But, you know, any SEC game, any team that has the ability and has the talent that they have, you know, to be ranked in the top 25 has the ability to beat any other team in the SEC. So, for me, it's a series you don't want to look past. It's also a series that you want to be able to be fundamentally sound. You don't want to walk guys. You don't want to make errors. You don't want to just give them unnecessary extra outs, because that's how those types of teams beat you. I think top to bottom, LSU is better talent-wise, but, you know, talent doesn't always prevail in baseball. And so I think that, you know, what I want to see for this weekend, I think the key for LSU to win this weekend is go out there and attack the strike zone, use the momentum that Anderson is going to give you on Friday because he's done it all year, and just continue to do that, whether it's the bullpen or the starters. And, you know, what happened last weekend was the bullpen. So come in, just, I'd rather the team beat you with hits than you walk the guy. So, for me, that it's as simple as that. It's LSU not beating themselves more than Mississippi State beating them.
Yeah, Mikey, with the upcoming weekend series against Mississippi State's off to a 1-5 start in SEC play. But, I mean, three of those losses came to Texas, and the other two losses came to Oklahoma. I mean, there's a top 10 teams for a reason. So, it goes to your point about the SEC being a complete gauntlet. I want to get your thoughts on the offense. It's been so strong all season long. It really felt like that Sunday game, you know, give credit to Texas's pitching staff. That's what Jay did post-game. But it felt like an outlier more than anything else, where, you know, you have 11 strikeouts to basically two walks. It's been kind of the inverse all season long for this team. And it starts at the top, right? Derek Curiel has been awesome as the leadoff hitter for this team this year as a freshman. You know, he leads the team in walks with 24. He's just an on-base machine. He's tied for the top with Jared Jones hitting 420 this season. I want to get your evaluation of Derek Curiel and what you've seen from the young player so far.
Yeah, he's been extremely impressive. Obviously, comes in with a lot of hype. You know, he's a guy that didn't think they were going to get on campus, and they got on campus, and you felt like it was a stacked outfield, but, you know, if he was going to have to earn his way onto the field, he's obviously done that. Day one starter from the beginning, top of the lineup from the beginning of the season. And I think what makes him so special just from watching him, is he never – he has a poise that's not normal for a freshman, right? He's very calm at the plate. He doesn't ever get too jumpy. He doesn't ever get out of what he's trying to do. And he's allowing the game to come to him, which that's one of the hardest things to do in baseball. It took me – I don't know if I ever figured out how to do that. But he is very good at it. And that is a part of why he is able to accumulate the walks that he has and get on base like he has and be able to adjust to the pitchers throughout the course of the game, because everybody's going to make adjustments. And so his bat-to-ball skills are obviously uncanny, but it's the poise, it's the understanding of the strikes, the understanding of who he is as a hitter that's been so impressive to me.
And then I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball a little bit here, Mikey, before we let you run. With, you know, as far as Cade Anderson goes on Friday, he was basically the highlight of the week, and he looked awesome against Texas in the Friday night start. And he's basically your ace for the rest of the season. They use Zach Cowan behind him. And Zach Cowan, yep. Jay's called the MVP of the team multiple times. He's been used in all these high leverage moments. He had the extended outing on Friday, so really wasn't able to get used the rest of the weekend. I mean, do you see that kind of being the plan for Fridays with Cade and then Zach and just kind of shutting down opposing offenses for that first game to kind of go up 1-0? Or, you know, with the bullpen struggles that you saw a little bit this past weekend, is Jay going to kind of see how it goes and maybe use Zach Cowan later on in the weekend, depending on high leverage moments, so to speak?
I think it's going to be a more of a case by case basis. I think that you can kind of look on how Jay used Griffin Herring last year. You know, he used him in situations like on Fridays where, hey, you're going to close the game out, you're going to throw four innings, and we're going to get out of here. Or used them in situations where you use them multiple times on a weekend or save them until Sunday. And the conversation throughout the course of that year was, when's Griffin Herring going to get a start? We don't have a Sunday guy that's proven themselves to be the guy. Why don't you give him a start? And Jay stayed true with what he wanted Griffin to be, and that's the stopper and the MVP of the bullpen type guy. And it feels like Zach Allen's going to be the same type of role. I agree with his move of last week of getting the win on Friday. You know, it wasn't like the game was super away. It didn't get away from Texas until the very end. And you know, anytime you can go on the road on in the SEC and win a game, Friday game, you win it, and then you set yourself up for having an entire bullpen, which nobody could have predicted the bullpen kind of falling apart on Friday, on Saturday like it did. I think you're going to see that role from Zach throughout the course of the year. You know, I think that if LSU ends up blowing out a team on Friday, you're probably not going to see him throw with a 7-8 run lead very consistently on Fridays, and you'll be able to save him for the weekends. But, you know, I think if the game's anywhere within 4 or 5 runs – on Friday, you're probably going to see him first out the pen.
Mikey, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, always great when you come on. But I got to tell you this story. I have a neighbor of mine, and, you know, we always talk, you know, we'll talk a little bit LSU baseball, and he always will bring up, yeah, Skip Bertman was great, but he could have won a couple more national championships. And I'm like, what, dude? Hey, I'm going to get the smelling salts so you can come back to the real world. But it goes to show you sometimes, man, people get kind of caught up in all that. And how much pressure was on Tennessee last year with Tony to win that national championship?
Finally break through.
And he finally was able to get break through.
Right.
Man, you go through such a gauntlet to get to that point. And so it ain't as easy as you might think.
No, it's not. It's not easy. And it's you can have the most talented team, they don't always win. You have to have some luck and good fortune go your way. And you get spoiled when you see all the championships at Skip Point. It makes it look easy, and it's not easy. I can promise you that.
Thank you, Mikey. Appreciate it, bud.
Yep, thank y'all.
All righty, Mikey Mytook, man, played at LSU. Man, seems like almost yesterday. Now he's on Mic'd Up on YouTube. You can hear his thoughts on LSU baseball, basketball, football on YouTube at Mic'd Up. When we come back, Gary Smith, who covers the Tulane Green Wave, will be on with us to talk a little bit about their pro day today for the Green Wave right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, Gary Smith, who covers the Tulane Green Wave for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, and also publisher of thewavereport.com. Gary, each and every spring we got the pro day, and when I look at the Green Wave football team, the guys that have the best chance to get drafted, three in particular, mm-hmm. Caleb Ransaw, versatility there. He can play the outside corner, can play in the nickel. I think his best spot really may be free safety, to be honest with you. Mario Williams, a lot of that having to do with the hype coming out of high school. And he flashed it at times at Tulane. And then the guy I've gotten so many phone calls for about over the last couple weeks, Patrick Jenkins. Defensive tackle, former John Eric guy, went to TCU and then comes back to Tulane. So your thoughts on those three players and if you think anybody, I think you'll have some free agent signings out of this, certainly. But I think those three are the three guys with the very best chance to get selected.
I think you're probably right. I don't expect Mario Williams to get drafted. I think he's more likely going to be a camp guy. The other two I agree with. I would throw a couple of names in there as long shots. One, Aiden Huntington, who never really played great for Tulane last year, had a much better year at Louisiana Monroe as a junior, but he had a really good pro day today, and he has those measurables and the athletic ability that, you know, there's always the coach out there who may think we're the one that are going to get that potential out of him. And then another guy, Jonathan Edwards, cornerback, didn't even start for Tulane. He started two games this year. He is unbelievably fast on the football field. He has good times in the 40 in running too, but he made a play against Louisiana Lafayette that I'll never forget, where their running back was about 10 yards behind everybody, and he came from the far side of the field and ran him down inside the 5-yard line. He had a good pro day too. He's got those measurable, the speed that scouts like. But I think you're probably right. And I think really the only lock to get drafted is Caleb Ransaw, which is, you know, I don't think he had a great year for Tulane. He's very versatile. The coaches love him. They always talked him up big time, but this is a guy that had one career interception in college, and to me that's a little bit of a red flag. But I think because he just killed it at the combine, he was the one Tulane player invited to the NFL combine, and he ran a 4.33 40. He had a huge vertical jump. He had a great standing long jump, and he's rated the third best player at his position in athleticism there. He graded lower on the other things like performance and stuff like that, but I think he's the one definite to get drafted.
He went to the Senior Bowl.
He went to the Senior Bowl. Jonathan Edwards ended up going to the Senior Bowl, too. He was a late invitee. Caleb Ransaw, it seems to me the consensus is he'll probably be a fifth-round pick. If anybody else is drafted, and I agree with you that Patrick Jenkins has, I think he has the best shot of those other guys, I think it'll be a sixth or seventh round.
One of the things with Mario is the fact that, he gives you some problems because he can vertically challenge you, but he's vertically challenged too. He's not the tallest guy around. And again, man, with all the hype when he came out of high school, never quite living up to that. And so just like you were saying about, you know, the Edwards comp that, you know, he didn't get, only started two games. I'm Dr. Phil. I can change Mario Williams too. And so you're going to get that in this league.
That's definitely true. I think the height is he doesn't have the measurables. He's fast. He's not super fast. He's fast, but that size is a concern when you don't have the incredible production. He had a terrific last four games for Tulane. That was the best he played, other than he obviously had a good sophomore year at USC, had the drops as a junior there. He does a lot better than people think in terms of the personality and the work ethic and all of that stuff. That's not a concern at all. A lot of people think because he was such a hyped guy coming out of high school, played for three schools in college, played at USC, left USC, that he's a head case, and that's not the case at all. I just don't know if there's enough consistent performance there for him to get drafted considering his size.
I'm going to throw maybe the curveball at you. From what you've seen at the quarterback position, and all three are different. We had on Coach Sumrall, and I was like, man, I said, you used to reading the name tags? And he said, Mike, let me tell you what we did. We got him these workout little pullover shirts, and they would have the name on the back and the front. So he said, that's how I got to learn how the names of the players, because we had much turnover. But what you've seen at the quarterback position, because all three are distinctly different, who would have the edge today if you had to play a game?
if I had to play a game, I would have. I honestly have no idea who would have the edge, and I'm dead serious on that. You want to talk about a wide, wide, wide open competition, and this is it. And you're right. You want to talk about three different body types. You've got 6'7", huge arm. You've got 5'11", not a huge arm, but accurate thrower. And then you got Mr. Middle from Illinois, who's 6'3", and kind of combines both. So it's never hard to figure out which one it is.
well, those he knew the difference. It's some of the other guys. But, and with so much changeover, Gary, and you can hear it in Coach Summerall's voice, that he said, I've never had this much turnover on a football team before. You can see that, you know, he understands that this is going to take quite an undertaking to piece all this together for 2025.
Yeah. Look, if you really forced me to say right now, I think I would go with the little guy, Caden Simonza of the three from Ball State, because I think he's the most accurate, and I think he makes the best decisions. But remember, at this time last year, I was one of the Darian Mensa skeptics. I didn't think that there was any way that they were going to go with a guy who had no experience whatsoever over two guys that did, and then it turned out to be a pretty easy choice for them.
Yeah, it worked out well, didn't it?
I don't trust myself and my opinions anymore on a lot of this stuff.
Hey, listen, I know the feeling, Gary. I know that. Gary, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate time and all your insights, and we'll have you on once we get a little bit farther into the spring.
Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. Gary Smith does a fabulous job covering Tulane. It doesn't matter if it's baseball, basketball, football. Does a great job as the chief beat writer for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate for the Tulane Green Wave. We'll be back to finish it up here in hour number two right after this break on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTillia along with Charlie Long. Last week, New York Giants signed Jameis Winston, 2-year contract. About a half an hour ago, they signed Russell Wilson to a 1-year deal with the Giants. So we'll see what happens there. I think they're still looking for a quarterback, because if you're looking for the future,
definitely a long-term option.
It's not going to be either one of those two guys. We have more Sports Talk and LSU baseball right after this news break.
Welcome on into the second half of Sports Talk this Tuesday, March 25th. We are counting down to the start of LSU baseball taking on the University of Louisiana Lafayette. A 6:30 first pitch right here on the Big 870 AM and 105.3 FM, along with the Odyssey app. We'll see if the Tigers can get back on track after dropping 2 of 3 in their SEC weekend series at Texas. Definitely a tough one for the Tigers, looking to bounce back in a big way. And seeing from the tweets out from the LSU baseball account that Jaden Newt will be starting for the Tigers this evening. I guess, Charlie, we'll see how long he ends up on the bump for them. I would hope, you know, get a good 3 or 4 innings of work in.
Yeah, that's what you got last week when he went up against UNO. You got 4 innings off of him, 4 hits, 1 run, 5 strikeouts. It's his longest performance with the Tigers. It seems like he's going to be kind of their midweek arm now, this guy that they're starting. You know, we'll see how long he goes. Last week, after him, it was Jacob Myers and then Cooper Williams following him up. But that was a 7-inning game because LSU run-ruled UNO 11-1. We'll see what happens tonight. UL's not off to a great start this year, as I've mentioned on the show before, Steve. It's a little upsetting that they're coming off of so many good seasons back-to-back-to-back, and then all of a sudden they're off to an 11-14 start. I know they're young, and maybe they'll get it going in Sun Belt play, but LSU's getting them at a good time.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see because, you know, there's the two, you know, I guess, sides of thought there that maybe UL's catching LSU at the right time right now where they're down, or are the Tigers looking to roar back in a big way?
I think it's quite literally the opposite. I think they're going to see a pissed off LSU team after losing their first weekend series of the season. And then, you know, you have this midweek game, and then you have Mississippi State. And as I mentioned when we were interviewing Mikey Matuk, Mississippi State is 1-5 in SEC play. Yes, but look at who they played. They played Texas in the opening weekend, and then they played Oklahoma in the second weekend. That's two top 10 ranked teams. It's just part of the SEC gauntlet, right? Like, Mississippi State is not getting a very friendly schedule to start off. When you have to face Texas, Oklahoma, and LSU in your first 3 weekends of conference play, that is brutal.
And you mentioning schedule, things changed up a little bit this week. We got a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series.
I saw Mississippi State play in Houston, Steve. The Astros were actually streaming the games. One of the weekend kind of tournaments, they played, I think, Oklahoma State in the game that I watched. It was a few weeks back. It was, you know, non-conference schedule. Obviously, it was early on in the season. They weren't super impressive. And obviously, things can change as the season progresses, but I'm not super surprised by their 1-5 start in conference play. As I mentioned, you know, I only saw them play a couple times when they were in that Houston Classic that the Astros were streaming on YouTube for free. So it's just like, why not watch some free college baseball? But I wasn't super impressed.
Well, you mentioned things can change. That happened this weekend. I feel like for the LSU bullpen, we had been talking about how deep they were and how much talent there was there. And they kind of, you know, hit a rough spot against the Longhorns.
Yeah. You still have a couple pieces on the mound that you feel great about, including Zach Cowan, including Kaysen Evans, Cade Anderson. I would even throw Anthony Hyenson in there too, Steve. I know that people have been very critical of him, but you know, outside of maybe the Missouri start, he's been really solid for this LSU team. I trust him as the Saturday night guy moving forward. Cade Anderson has established himself as the Friday night ace. So you have a few pieces in the bullpen that you really love. It's just about who's that next tier going to kind of emerge or emerge in that next tier, so to speak, to become, you know, the valuable pieces that Jake can really, really trust.
Switching over to some NFL news, we got word right before the last hour ended that Russell Wilson has reached a one-year deal with the New York Football Giants. That QB room now looks like Wilson. You have Jameis Winston. And you have Tommy DeVito.
Tommy Cutlets. Yeah, no.
I don't know if this rules out the G-men taking a quarterback in the draft, but I'm not so sure they go with the third overall pick for a QB now.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see because you don't have a long-term answer there. I mean, you have Jameis on a two-year deal.
There.
That's true as well. That's a good point. Jameis is on a two-year deal. And then you just signed Russ to a one-year deal that can get up to $21 million in one season for Russell Wilson. I mean, good for him getting a payday, but we saw what Russ was doing leading that Steelers offense this past season. It, especially late in the year, and it's not very pretty. It's kind of a one-trick pony at this point. So, yes, I think that the Giants would still be interested in drafting a quarterback, but it's also maybe a move to kind of ensure, hey, if Cleveland takes Shedeur Sanders with the 102, then we got two quarterbacks that can still battle it out in camp.
Yeah, that's going to be fun to watch for the NFC East over there with those two quarterbacks in the mix. Curious to see now where that last domino goes with an Aaron Rodgers. It feels like it's going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, probably so. I mean, we'll see what happens.
There's
there.
Really not much.
The funny thing is out the there fit is kind of bad. Don't you think, Steve? Like, for those that watched Aaron Rodgers play with the Jets just this past season, and you have, you know, you make the move for DK Metcalf, you have him, you have George Pickens, you have like these big outside receivers that will go up and make these contested catches. Can Rodgers get it down there at this point in his career?
Agreed.
I don't know. So that's kind of my question. I don't like the fit, but at this point, if you're talking about the QB vacancies where a team would still go after a veteran, yes, Pittsburgh does make sense. As far as maybe Minnesota, there were some ties there, which would be really funny because he'd follow the Brett Favre career arc. I don't know about that either.
Yeah, I thought that kind of got squashed.
Yeah, maybe so. So we'll have to see. But yeah, at this point, it definitely feels like Pittsburgh's the most likely spot for him. I just kind of question the fit there. And then, Steve, another thing that just popped up, ESPN's Adam Schefter reporting this, that the Patriots reached a agreement with four-time Pro Bowl wide receiver Stephon Diggs.
Really?
3 years, $69 million contract. So that's breaking news just now. And if you're the Patriots, you have the money, just spend it. You know, why not, right? We were joking, Mike and I were talking earlier on about how the Patriots could be the first kind of potential landing spot for Tet McMillan in this draft order. Now at this point, you get paid big money to Stephon Diggs, which at this point in his career, you know, we'll see how much he can kind of produce with that Patriots offense. They need help everywhere.
Right.
Like, that's a Patriots team that needs help on the offensive line. They desperately need help in their wide receiver room, so they get it there. Just help your young quarterback, because he looks like he could be special. He just needs some pieces around him, and hopefully Coach Vrabel and the Patriots front office can start to put that together.
Sticking with the NFL, the Tulane Green Wave had their pro day today, and it was over at the Saints facility on Airline Drive. Coach John Summerall addressed the media, talking about some of the players that could be draft potentially going in the draft. And I think the two main guys would be defensive back Caleb Ransaw and D-lineman Aiden Huntington, who have a chance to at least get drafted in the NFL, not being undrafted free agents. Certainly a spot maybe for a couple of Green Wave guys. But here's what Coach John Summerall had to say after seeing his players doing their pro day workouts.
Coach, having most of the league representing here, I believe it's 31 if it's not 32 teams. What does that say about the brand?
Yeah, I think it doesn't hurt that you have a top-end guy like Caleb. You know, everybody, he ran the 40 at the combine, and I think it was 4.32 or something. So that doesn't hurt when you know he's going to do drill work. It's nice to have a top-end of the draft marquee type guy that can maybe get other guys a look or attention. But then I think the depth of this team, you know, you look at both DBs today, Jonathan and Micah, both corners, ran really good times, in the top end times. All the receivers represent themselves well. Pat Jenkins looked really good. I mean, I think there's a lot of interest in different guys maybe having a fit at the next level, and so that's a positive to have that many teams. Anytime you can get 31 or 32 at your pro, that's a positive.
What do you think Caleb will bring to the next level? You've seen him for years, even going back to Troy, and
yeah.
Now, you know, obviously, to see him get people to, you know, get that 40 time, the sixth fastest in Indianapolis last month, what do you think he's going to bring to an NFL team, and what's it been like for you to see him grow like this?
It's been fun to see him grow. You know, he's from my hometown, basically. I grew up in Huntsville. I tell him all the time, he's from Harvest, not Huntsville, which is like out in the sticks a little bit more. I'm a city boy compared to him. But I remember watching Caleb in high school. What I think he's going to bring to an NFL team is he's got five position DB physical ability. And what I mean by that is he can go outside and run and play corner. He did that in 22 for us at Troy. In 23, he played in the slot. In 24 here, he played the slot. His best long-term position could be safety. That's where he played the Senior Bowl. And so he's got the physical ability to be a five-position DB. More impressive, he's got the mental makeup. Like, he is a football junkie. You know, he had an illness about a year ago, and I went to go visit him when he was having to get something handled at the hospital. And he's in a hospital bed watching PFF and watching other draftable DBs in this year's class that he thought he could compare to. And so he's just ate up with the game. He loves it. He's a football junkie. And so, high character kid, competitive kid, really a good representation of what all our guys, I think, that are here today are. But I think he's got a really bright future. And as he's gone through the draft process, I think he's elevated. I think he's helped himself out at every step of the process so far.
What about a guy like, you know, Jonathan, obviously, you know, no yeah. combine invite. He does well at the Senior Bowl. Now, you know, working his way up stock-wise, too. What do you think he'll bring?
Yeah, Jonathan's a cool story. You know, he came to us from Indiana State, got here in June last year. So a late addition to the team. Big and fast. Like, you can't teach his size and his speed. You either have that or you don't. And when we got him, it was like getting a ball of clay. Like, we were a guy that we were able to teach a lot and him learn a lot. He's a sponge. He's a great kid. You know, he got the late call up to the Senior Bowl game. I remember when Jim Nagy called me to ask if I could get Jonathan on the phone to get him up there. Jonathan's response was like, hey, is that a good thing to get invited to that game? I'm like, yeah, it's a pretty good thing. You need to get up there. He's like, well, what if I don't have a ride? I'm like, I'll drive you. And so I think his ceiling is really, really high. You know, has a lot of development left. I think his best football is not just a year out in front of him. I think it could be 4, 5, 6 years out in front of him, potentially, because of the type of athlete he is. I still think he's got a lot left of development for sure.
That was Tulane head coach John Summerall there. The Green Wave going through their, you know, spring workouts right now as well. Got to take a break today, though, and take part at the pro day going on at the Saints facility. And something that says a lot about where this Green Wave program has become now, Charlie, is that 31 of 32 NFL teams, they had representatives present there today.
Coach Summerall's awesome, man. We talked to him every single week during the football season with Tulane Tuesday. We talked to him last week as well, kind of, you know, getting a spring recap early on. They just started spring practice sessions, and he's been talking about all the turnaround that they're doing with this roster. It's like the craziest shift he's ever had year to year. But at the same time, if you're trusting anyone to lead your football program, Coach Summerall is high on the list. He's fantastic.
Yeah, A-plus guy right there that they got to replace, you know, the last guy who was
Coach
pretty
Fritz.
Yeah, Coach Fritz was pretty darn good, too. His voice was a little hard to listen to. I'm wondering how he's doing right now.
I don't think Houston had a very good season this past year.
No, they didn't, right.
Yeah, so.
We're going to take a break here on Sports Talk as we get ready for LSU baseball taking on UL Lafayette, a 6:30 first pitch right here on WWL. I'll be back after the break talking a little more to you here on Sports Talk. Pushing out this edition of Sports Talk, getting ready for LSU baseball taking on Louisiana Lafayette, a 6:30 first pitch on WWL and the Odyssey app. Tomorrow on Sports Talk, make sure you tune in to get updates from LSU's Pro Day with Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak. We'll also be talking Sweet 16 with Nicholls basketball coach Tavon Sandler. Also, getting ready for SEC baseball, one of our favorites, Mark Etheridge, joins us. So stay tuned tomorrow, folks. Have a great night, and we'll be back with more Sports Talk.